that kind of discourages them from even trying to vote. And then now you have these arrests. One very important thing, though, I want to note, Amy, is that I remember when there was a raid on in Mar-a-Lago, President Trump's home, how some people were questioning the timing of the FBI raid, saying that it's suspicious that they would raid 2 years before a presidential election. And now, my statement to them is that if people are concerned about the timing 2 years off, right here in Florida, these arrests started on the eve of elections, right? Whether it was the primary election that we had in August, right? And now, of course, the general election that we have here in November. And so these arrests are frighteningly close to election, and it can't be any other conclusion to make other than that this is an intimidating tactic to scare people away from participating in our democracy. And so folks need to be outraged at this. Folks need to fight back. And one of the ways they can do this, Amy, is that we've set up bail funds for these individuals, and we've set up a legal defense fund. The gentleman that you talked about whose case was dropped, we were able to provide an attorney for this young man so he's able to successfully challenge these charges in court.
We have
and
five
we're providing
seconds,
attorneys
Desmond.
For any individual who are arrested on these charges, and we're making sure that people are also able to bail out if they cannot afford to post bail.
Desmond Mead, we want to thank you for being with us, president of the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, chair of the Floridians for a Fair Democracy. Tune in November.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Does your employer have a matching gifts program? Many companies offer dollar-for-dollar matching charitable contributions for donations you make to KBOO. The impact of your gift may be doubled or possibly tripled. Participating companies also match gifts made by retirees and or spouses. Matching gifts are a great way for you to maximize your membership dollars. Check with your company's human resources or accounting departments to find out if your employer matches charitable contributions, then request a matching gift form. For more information on companies making matching gifts, go to kboo.fm/employer matching.
Join KBOO every Friday at 5:30 p.m. for Counterspin, a show that provides a critical examination of major media stories and exposes what the mainstream media missed. Counterspin exposes and highlights censored stories, sexism, racism, and homophobia in the news, the power of corporate influence, gaffes and goofs by leading TV pundits, and more. That's every Friday at 5:30 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, new information is released on the federal surveillance of Portland protesters in 2020. Oregonians should have received their ballots for the 2022 midterm election. And billionaire Elon Musk buys Twitter, ushering conservative voices back to the platform. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 28th, 2022. I'm Althea Billings. A newly unredacted report demonstrates how federal officials politicized intelligence gathering in response to the 2020 protests in Portland. Near-complete records of the Department of Homeland Security's intelligence gathering on Portland protesters has been released. A heavily redacted version of the report was published in 2021. The report shows that two officials were the main drivers of the intelligence gathering efforts that pushed constitutional boundaries. The report names Acting Secretary of Homeland Security Chad Wolf and Acting Deputy Secretary Ken Cuccinelli. These department heads tasked analysts with creating operational background reports, or baseball cards, on every person who attended protests. That would equate to intelligence dossiers on thousands of Portlanders. The report writes that this was motivated by a belief that there was one, quote, U.S. person funding the protests, or that there was an overarching coordination that stemmed back from one person. analysts push back on this idea, instead creating reports for people who were arrested for quote-unquote violent acts. These reports contained a lot of personal information and included data on social media accounts like people's friend lists and their social posts, monitoring their free speech. Another official insisted that protesters be referred to as violent, Antifa, anarchist-inspired, which analysts long insisted was not grounded in any of their intelligence collection. That was acting Undersecretary for Intelligence and Analysis Brian Murphy. Despite the pushback that labeling protesters in this way was inaccurate, Murphy insisted that protesters be called violent, Antifa, anarchist-inspired, or VAAI. The report reads, quote, "For weeks, the analysts had been telling Mr. Murphy that because Antifa was not in the collection, it could not be put into the analysis." The report says that this insistence seriously concerned the Associate General Counsel, who considered it questionable intelligence activity, and went on to brief the Director of National Intelligence on it. The unredacted report is a result of pressure from Oregon Senator Ron Wyden on the Department of Homeland Security, who ended up changing their public records policy as a result. Wyden made a statement Thursday saying that Oregonians have a right to the full account of the Trump administration's, quote, "twisted efforts to provoke violence in Portland for his political gain." Wyden continued, quote, "Now the public knows much more about how political DHS officials spied on Oregonians for exercising their First Amendment right to protest and justified it with baseless conspiracy theories," end quote. Oregon voters should have received their ballots for the November 2022 midterm election by now. If folks have not received a ballot or received one that was in any way damaged, officials recommend contacting the county election office to get a new one right away. Ballots are due by 8 p.m. on Tuesday, November 8th. That can be in a drop box or postmarked. But postmarked means that it's been in the hands of the U.S. Postal Service, so it's important to be aware of the time that ballots are put in the mailbox in order to make sure that they get postmarked by Election Day. Ballots put into an official drop box by 8 p.m. on the 8th will be counted that night. The Pentagon says Russia and China are the biggest global threats, and Attorney General Merrick Garland limits DOJ subpoenas on reporters. With those stories and more, it's Mary Sherman with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We have not seen anything to indicate that Putin has made a decision to use a dirty bomb, nor have we seen any indications that the Ukrainians are planning such a thing.
A new Pentagon Defense Strategy report says amid its invasion of Ukraine, Russia is a serious threat to the U.S. and its allies. But Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin notes that China remains the overall greatest security challenge as it aggressively builds up its military in the South China Sea and increases pressure on Taiwan. And the report cautions that China is trying to undermine American alliances in the Indo-Pacific region. Attorney General Merrick Garland has formally blocked the Department of Justice from using subpoenas to seize the records of journalists and government leak investigations. Temporary policies were first put in place in July 2021 amid reports that the DOJ, under then-Attorney General William Barr, had secretly sought email records of reporters critical of the Trump administration. And on the topic of leaks, Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito says the draft opinion secretly released prior to the court overturning the nationwide right to abortion was a grave betrayal of trust.
The leak also made those of us who were thought to be in the majority in support of overruling Roe and Casey targets for assassination, because it gave people a rational reason to think they could prevent that from happening by killing one of us.
A man accused of attempting to murder Justice Brett Kavanaugh is currently on trial. A federal appeals court has rejected former President Donald Trump's request to reconsider a ruling that his tax returns must be disclosed to a congressional committee. Trump could appeal to the Supreme Court. 2022 will likely be the most expensive year for federal lobbying to date. Data from Open Secrets shows that federal lobbyists raked in $3 billion through the third quarter of 2022, about $744 million shy of the $3.8 billion spent last year. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is the biggest spender. Phoenix police have made an arrest related to a break-in at a campaign office of Arizona Democratic gubernatorial candidate Katie Hobbs. A spokesperson for Hobbs blamed her Republican rival, Carrie Lake, who said the allegation is absurd.
Are you guys buying that? Are you really buying that? This just sounds like a Jussie Smollett part two. I can't believe that she would blame my amazing people, blame me for something like that.
Gun violence prevention advocates will participate in more than 200 election events this weekend across the country. Brenda Moss of El Paso, whose son was shot and killed in 2014, says guns are responsible for 110 deaths each day in the U.S.
Let's move. Let's move forward. Stop guessing. Stop debating. The time is now. Every life is important in this moment, not in the future, not in the past. They're important in this moment.
I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
On Monday, the Supreme Court will hear opening arguments in a case that could strike down affirmative action in universities and colleges across the nation. Suzanne Potter has more.
The Supreme Court will hear opening arguments on Monday in a pair of cases that could spell the end of affirmative action on American college campuses. Activist Edward Blum with the group Students for Fair Admissions sued Harvard and the University of North Carolina, arguing that race-conscious admissions criteria unconstitutionally discriminate against Asian American students. Thomas Sines, president of the Mexican American Legal Defense and Education Fund, says he expects the court to rule against affirmative action, but he says colleges can still address the problem from a different angle.
Among the race-neutral remedies that we should expect universities to look at are eliminating selection criteria that have demonstrated and unjustified discriminatory effects on Latino and Black students. Things like standardized tests and even things like teacher recommendations.
California banned preferential treatment in education and government in 1996 with Proposition 209. Since then, the share of Black, Native American, and Latino students in public universities has fallen. For example, Latinos made up 59% of the state's high school graduates in 2019, but only 29% of that year's freshman class at the University of California. Sally Chen, with the group Chinese for Affirmative Action, says Blum is no friend of students of color.
He is not calling for anti-bias trainings, support for professors of color, funding cultural centers, or anything that really supports students of color. He's advancing Asian Americans as a front in this conservative right-wing attack on civil rights.
Private colleges and universities in California were not covered by Prop 209 and can still use race-conscious admissions policies. But that could change if the Supreme Court rules against Harvard University, a private institution. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
After a prolonged legal battle, Elon Musk now owns Twitter. Twitter is becoming a private company that everyday investors will no longer be able to buy shares in. The New York Stock Exchange suspended trading in the company's stock today, and the shares will be delisted on November 8th. Musk's plan for the company remains largely unknown. He's made many contradictory statements about what he wants to do. Major personnel shakeups are widely expected. In fact, Musk fired several top Twitter executives yesterday, including the CEO, the CFO, and the head of legal policy, trust, and safety. Some think Musk might welcome back influential conservative figures banned for violating Twitter's rules. Former President Donald Trump was an avid tweeter before being ejected from the platform. Trump has repeatedly said that he would not return to Twitter if his account was reinstated. That Twitter account remains suspended as of late today. Some conservatives already began tweeting long-debunked conspiracy theories, including some concerning COVID-19 and the 2020 election, allegedly to test whether Twitter's policies on misinformation were still being enforced. After Musk signed a deal to acquire Twitter in April, he tried to back out of it, leading the company to sue him to force him to go through with that acquisition. A series of moves by Musk this week signaled that the deal would, in fact, take place. Some analysts think that Musk and his investors overpaid. Even Musk has stated that the $44 billion price tag for Twitter was too high, but he added that the company had great potential. On Wednesday, Musk entered the company's San Francisco headquarters carrying a porcelain sink and tweeted, quote, "Entering Twitter HQ, let that sink in," end quote. Yesterday, he tweeted, "The bird is freed," a reference to Twitter's logo. Musk has previously expressed distaste for advertising and was said to be considering other business models, such as paid subscriptions. However, there appears to be a newfound emphasis on advertising revenue, including providing targeted ads that rely on collecting and analyzing users' personal information. Former President Trump did weigh in on the acquisition, saying, quote, "I am very happy that Twitter is now in sane hands," end quote. An Oregon judge revoked a $77,000 campaign fine levied against Portland City Council candidate Renee Gonzalez yesterday, saying that no campaign finance violations were committed. Gonzalez was initially slapped with a hefty fine in September by the city's small donor elections program when his campaign did not report a significant discount on rent in an office space in downtown Portland. According to the Small Donors Election Bureau, that counted as an in-kind donation. The space in question had been charging Gonzalez's campaign $250 a month in rent, though evidence was presented suggesting that the rent for that type of space had been advertised at $26 per square foot, the equivalent of $6,900 in monthly rent. Judge Joe Allen wrote in an 18-page opinion that, quote, "The city failed to carry its burden to demonstrate that the discounted office space constituted contributions because its fair market value exceeded the amount paid." The judge asserted that $250 a month for downtown Portland office space was reasonable. In response to the ruling, Portland Election Commission Chair Amy Sample Ward said she was stunned by the decision, saying it's created a loophole for donors that renders current contribution regulations in the program useless. Ward noted that the city may appeal against the decision, but recommended that current program rules be amended to address future instances of this kind of thing. Renee Gonzalez is running against incumbent Commissioner Joanne Hardesty in the upcoming November election. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's the Magical Mystery Tour. Then at 7, stick around for Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will see some showers and an overnight low of 50 degrees. Tomorrow's weather may include some showers as well as overcast skies with daytime highs at 61. Today in history, in 2009, President Barack Obama signed the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act, which expanded federal hate crime laws to include those motivated by a victim's actual or perceived gender identity, sexual orientation, or disability. The quote of the day is from American pop artist Roy Lichtenstein, who was born yesterday in 1923. He said, quote, "My work isn't about form, it's about seeing. I'm excited about seeing things, and I'm interested in the way I think other people see things." Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez issued an executive order to investigate cases of missing and murdered Indigenous people in a more empathetic way in a multi-state initiative. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez has issued an executive order to investigate cases of missing people in a way that's more empathetic to victims and families. As Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports, it's part of a federal multi-state initiative to address a crisis gripping Indian country.
Nez and other tribal leaders met with FBI officials and prosecutors from Arizona, New Mexico, and Utah for the planned signing ceremony. According to officials, the guidelines are part of a response plan both to find missing people and to help victims and families heal. They hope it'll serve as a template for the Navajo Nation to share data across local, state, and federal jurisdictions and collaborate on cases involving missing and murdered Indigenous people. Nez says his order is designed to set a tone of hope and pioneer a new era of cooperation cooperation between the tribe, U.S. Attorney's Office, and the FBI. For years, records of missing Native Americans have been incomplete or outdated. In July, the FBI's Albuquerque office launched a project to create a more dynamic and comprehensive list of missing people on the Navajo Nation. As of October 11th, it included 192 names. The Navajo Nation plan is among the first of 11 pilot programs begun in Indian Country through the U.S. Attorney General's Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons Initiative. The more than 27,000 square mile Navajo Nation spans parts of northern Arizona, New Mexico, and Utah. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff, Arizona.
The Association of Tribal Archives, Libraries, and Museums ended its conference Thursday with the largest attendance of more than 1,200 participants in Temecula, California, as Rhonda Lavaldo reports.
The theme of ATALM was intertwined cultures, stronger together, and many attendees agreed. Gina Pione, Spokane Tribe, an archivist with the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission, says this conference helps tribal nations with the storytelling aspect unique to them.
I just think that it's important for each tribe to be able to tell their own story, and that, you know, there just hasn't been a good forum for people to come together and tell that, you know, in a collective way. So as more money becomes available, funding, and you get more expertise because you have more tribal members that are pursuing either education or experiences that deal with cultural preservation, exhibits, all of those things, and storytelling. So I think everybody just really wants to assert their own stories.
Rick West, ATALM Board of Governors, say they always want to highlight the work of Native people, and the conference was successful in getting attendees to share their ideas.
I want ATALM always to be a generator in making our voice heard, telling our own stories, etc., keeping those stories, having them speak both to the past and probably even as important to the future. That's what I want. And I want ATALM to be always identified with accomplishing those kinds of objectives.
ATALM 2023 will be held in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma next year. This is Rhonda Lavaldo for National Native News.
Tribal leaders in California will discuss challenges in their repatriation efforts at an informational hearing at the state legislature next week before the Assembly Select Committee on Native American Affairs. Leaders are also expected to provide input about a proposed council under the oversight of the California Natural Resources Agency. The council will evaluate projects and the distribution of $70 million to increase tribal access and co-management of public lands and recommendations for returning tribal ancestral land. The hearing will take place Thursday in Sacramento. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Cybersecurity isn't just about governments and corporations protecting against large-scale system attacks. Information technology experts say individuals can play their part by avoiding suspicious activity that trickles down to them. Mike Mullen has the details.
In a digital world, employers often require some form of cybersecurity training. A local government official in Wisconsin encourages people not to let the helpful tips fade from their memories. October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And federal officials say nearly 50% of American adults have had their personal information exposed by cyber criminals. But Tim Lemmers, IT manager for the Milwaukee suburb of Greenfield, says a lot of the threats that reach individuals don't come from system hacks, but rather from social engineering.
The people who are trying to hack your environments, they're getting your information. They're looking up you, looking up the street you lived on, you know, your first pet's name. And they're trying to use that kind of information to target you specifically, to get you to click on a thing where they can steal your information and then pose as you.
He says a key prevention tool is paying close attention to your emails to spot someone sending a message that looks official but contains a harmful link. Grammatical errors in messages are red flags, and by placing the computer mouse over the link without clicking on it, you can see where the message is actually coming from. Lemmer says all it takes is one bad click to send an IT department scrambling. He notes everyone has some personal information somewhere on the internet, and it's impossible to scrub it all. Another important shield is password maintenance.
Make sure you change them regularly. And by regularly, depending on how important the website is, you know, if it's your Netflix account, maybe every 6 months, maybe once a year. If it's your banking information, maybe change that a little more often.
If you're going to use words, he says long phrases of interconnected words can make a difference. And a mix of uppercase and lowercase letters, along with special characters, can also make passwords stronger. Federal data also show that 600,000 Facebook accounts are hacked each day. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
Diabetes Awareness Month is in November, and experts say it could be the time to develop a self-care plan to prevent pre-diabetes or manage diabetes and its related health problems, from heart disease to kidney disease and vision loss. Danielle Smith has more on the story in Arkansas.
November is Diabetes Awareness Month, and one expert says Arkansans can reverse pre-diabetes and prevent the onset of type 2 diabetes. Dr. Griffin P. Rogers with the National Institute of Health says it takes a self-care plan that includes a healthy lifestyle and dietary changes. Rogers says diabetes is the condition of a person's blood glucose level being too high, and it's on the rise in Arkansas. He says the disease affects about 37 million Americans, roughly 11% of the U.S. population.
The state of Arkansas, the prevalence is higher. It's about 12.4%. Arkansas has the fifth highest in terms of the ranking in the U.S. states in terms of the prevalence of diabetes. What seems to be driving this high number, both in Arkansas and other states, is the prevalence of obesity.
According to the CDC, more than 300,000 Arkansans have been diagnosed with diabetes. Rogers says untreated, the condition becomes more serious over time, causing such health problems as heart disease, nerve damage, vision problems, and kidney disease. In pre-diabetes, a person's blood sugar levels are higher than normal, but haven't spiked high enough to be diagnosed as type 2 diabetes. Roger says the risk factors are the same, including obesity and a family history of diabetes. He notes a self-care plan is mostly common sense and should include regular doctor visits.
Diet to try to reduce your weight by 5 to 7% can greatly reduce your risk of going from pre-diabetes to diabetes. And the exercise, for example, is walking 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, and decreasing the amount of calories and eating low-fat and low-salt foods.
He recommends setting goals to manage what he calls the ABCs of diabetes. A stands for A1C, the test to measure your blood sugar. The number to aim for is below 7%. B is for blood pressure, which should be around 140 over 90 or less. And C is a reminder to maintain normal cholesterol levels. I'm Danielle Smith, Arkansas News Service.
U.S. coal use is falling, but some communities still bear pollution burden. A recent study of 11 states finds that natural gas plants are disproportionately located in communities of color and low-income areas. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. For decades, the U.S. has been relying less on coal and more on natural gas. Burning natural gas emits less carbon dioxide, but it still generates other pollutants that are dangerous to breathe.
We can't lose track of the fact that there are communities who have and continue to bear inequitable burdens from siting of facilities such as power plants.
That's Juan de Klet Barreto with the Union of Concerned Scientists. In a recent study, his team looked at power plants across the 11 states in the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, a program aimed at reducing carbon pollution from power plants. They found that as coal use has fallen, more natural gas plants have opened in the region, and a disproportionate number of natural gas plants are located in communities of color and low-income areas. Some are likely former coal plants that were converted to gas, which in some ways is an environmental win. But it also means that communities that have long struggled with pollution continue to bear a disproportionate burden. So de Klet Barreto says climate policies aimed at cutting carbon pollution should also address this injustice.
Climate change policy provides a great opportunity that we should not squander.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 28th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Danielle Smith, Antonia Gonzalez, Suzanne Potter, Mary Sherman, Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and Mike Moen. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KB programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. Thank you. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, a 1995 Washington Post story led with a macabre account from the widow of Philadelphia police officer Daniel Faulkner about how when her husband's bloody shirt was held up in court, his accused killer, Mumia Abu-Jamal, turned in his chair and smiled at her. It was an evocatively sinister report, which the paper printed, untroubled by the fact that court records showed that Abu-Jamal wasn't in court when the shirt was.